This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Two Supreme Court decisions last week were cause for celebration among LGBTQ and immigrants' rights activists, but at the same time, many urged caution. Both decisions came as a surprise, as some conservative justices sided with liberals to protect queer workers and shield the DACA program. But Chief Justice John Roberts left open the possibility for another try when it comes to DACA anyway, for the Trump administration to end the Obama-era program. Emilio Vicente joins me now, an advocacy and communications director for Familia, Trans Queer Liberation Movement, an immigration and queer advocacy group. Emilio, welcome back to the State of Things.
Thank you for having me on, Frank.
Good to have you. Last week was a busy one for you, your reaction to Monday's LGBTQ decision and then Thursday's DACA decision. How did you feel about that?
Yeah, no, it was definitely an unexpected week of joy. On Monday, the Supreme Court ruled that Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 protects against discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity, which is a huge win for the LGBT community at large. I think most of us were not sure how that decision was going to come out. And with this favorable decision, it really puts in protections for workplace discrimination for our communities. That was a big sigh of relief for many of us who were following that closely. And even with that decision, with the DACA decision on Thursday, most of us were assuming that one was going to be a bad decision. So you can imagine our shock when we saw the decision coming down on a 5-4 decision that DACA for now lives. I know that it gives a lot of relief for so many people who have DACA and for many people who relied on family members who have DACA. At the same time, we know there's still a lot to do. As was mentioned earlier, DACA for now lives. The Supreme Court ruled on the way that the Trump administration tried taking away DACA and not on its legality. And as we heard the next day, President Trump said that he is going to try to take away, he's going to try to bring it back to the Supreme Court. So unfortunately, the battle doesn't end there, and it really continues.
Well, let's talk about the continuation. The organization you work for obviously is the intersection of communities that were represented in these decisions. How are people in your professional circle reacting and now kind of framing the struggle as it goes forward?
Yeah, I mean, so those of us who live at the intersection of being part of the LGBT community and undocumented community are relieved because it gives us a little bit of sense of protection, as well as just overall not having to worry. For the past few months, we've had to tune in every morning on a Monday or Thursday when decisions have come out and really be our anxiety going up just waiting for these decisions to come out. So there is that sense of relief. And at the same time, we know that with this decision, there is a lot to do, that this is honestly just the beginning, that for many of us who have been really involved for the past 10 years or even longer or not even as long as 10 years, know that DACA was only the stepping stone towards safety and liberation for our people. And that especially now in this moment, that we're pushing for looking beyond people who have DACA. We're talking about maybe 700,000 people out of an estimated 11 million undocumented people in the country. And so we know that there's a lot to do and that in this moment, we really need to reevaluate what it means to be who's worthy of being in this country, and that we really need to shift that narrative of who a good, quote, immigrant is, or who is a model immigrant, or who we believe is deserving of being in this country just because they can speak really well English or they went to school here, and that this conversation needs to be about all of our family members who didn't have the same opportunities that those of us who grew up in this country did, and that that's the only way that we can really solve this issue. And I would also add that when we speak about immigration, it's also important to mention that it's not just a Latinx issue, that there are many other communities affected by immigration. There are around 1.5 million undocumented people from Asian countries. There are, of course, Black immigrants, Black undocumented people. And so in this moment as well, we need to think about immigration in the broader context of the uprisings that are happening across the country and really be in solidarity with the movement for Black lives and all of the protests that are going on, because all of these issues are intertwined.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that solidarity and the fact that those issues are intertwined, and they've always been intertwined, but the groups have not always been aligned. There has been tension between Latinx communities and Black communities historically. Things have thawed a little bit over the past few years. Within Black communities, ideas of gay rights, LGBTQ rights, not embraced quite as strongly. Historically, things are beginning to change. Where do you see the intersection now in terms of collaboration going forward? Are these groups starting to coalesce?
Yeah, I think that intersection has always been there, and they haven't been as visible as before. Just even talking about the Title VII case that LGBTQ people just won, that came out of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which we know is things because of the civil rights movement. And so now I think a lot of groups, especially those of us who have really learned the tactics of the civil rights movement, of what people did then, and using those now for immigrant rights organizing as well as LGBTQ organizing, honestly, any social justice organizing in this country, a lot of that comes from the civil rights movement. And so I think that you especially see a lot of collaboration now, because we all of us realize that we're fighting against the same system of oppression, that the police is one of those systems that collaborates with ICE, and we know heavily focuses on Black people. And at the same time, we know that there are Black immigrants in our communities and that there are Black Latinx folks in our communities, and that we are really strongest when our movements unite together.
Forgive me for interrupting, but I do want to stop you there, only because that has always been true. But we've seen, for instance, anywhere from 25% to 30% of what my previous guest at Northwestern called the Hispanic vote had been Republican nationally. And in large part, that was because of support of some conservative values around LGBTQ rights, not always strongly embraced in Hispanic communities, and not a top front of mind issue. Is that changing now? You talked about the fact that they're always been aligned, but I'm not sure that voters had always seen it that way in the Latinx community.
Right. And I mean, I think it's also important to mention that the Latino community is a very broad community. I think that the 27%, the 25% that you're mentioning I don't have those numbers with me. But also, yes, I think that there is obviously conservative elements in all communities, but including Latinx communities, that because of these social issues might not be supportive of all people or all including LGBTQ immigrants, just because we're talking about LGBTQ rights, which is very unfortunate. But I think that in this moment, I think a lot of us aren't really looking at, like, why is it that 25% aren't supporting us? Because, again, I think that this is just like a broader conversation of like building as much unity as we can. And right. I think that there will always be conservative people who vote against their interest. I think that looking beyond Latinx folks, I think it was like over 50% of white women who voted for Donald Trump. Right. And we know that Donald Trump's policies towards women are not the best.
So maybe the question for you is, what is the strategy going forward? And obviously bringing in new voters, maybe you're not going to convert voters who are already have a point of view on this, but then the hope might lie in mobilizing voters who are not yet registered, who had not yet been active. How is that front going?
Yeah. So my organization and a lot of the organizing that I have been doing hasn't been as focused around the voters. And I think that's also a very important thing to mention that, yes, this is an important election, but I think first we have to ask ourselves, why is it that we don't engage? Why is it that, for example, the Democratic Party doesn't engage as many people of color as it could? I think every election cycle, the Democratic Party especially talks about, we need to engage Latinx voters, and it happens every single cycle, and it only happens during presidential elections. And I would say that for more people to be engaged in the political process, they have to realize that they have voice and power, and that happens through organizing locally, through organizing around issues that people care about, and not necessarily always framing it in the context of that it has to be just about voting, and that these issues that we're talking about have long existed under Democratic and Republican administrations locally and nationally, and that for us to really engage all of these people, including in voting, that you have to do that intentional work of talking with people, working with people, not talking at people, but working with people in the issues that they care about, and also making them recognize that they have a lot of power in how they can shift these conversations locally. And I would give the quick example of DACA. DACA happened because undocumented youth, many of them queer, were the ones who really organized nationally and forced President Obama to make DACA happen, even though he didn't want to make it happen. And it's really well documented. So, that's a fact of like it was because of undocumented youth forcing the president to do the right thing. And for many of us, that's how we became politically engaged. And also in this moment, realized obviously the importance of what's happening politically during this election cycle, but also understanding that it has to be beyond that.
And beyond those issues, I think you would say as well, that immigration and LGBTQ rights are not the only issues that are facing all of us and that are important that you'd want to engage. Employment, healthcare, Latinx people in North Carolina more than four times more likely to contract COVID-19 than non-Latinx folks. So talk a little bit more about that. And tell me, because I know you're from Siler City, how are those issues playing out in the community you're from in Siler City?
So especially COVID-19 is very prominent, unfortunately, in Siler City. It has one of the highest rates, zip codes in the state. And that's probably because of the poultry plant in Siler City, Montair Farms. They are still forcing people to go to work. Many of them don't have the option of either not going to work because they don't have any paid leave benefits at all. And Montair Farms knows this. And that's why they came to such a vulnerable town, Siler City, that has at least 40% Latinx population. And so this is a very stark conversation of how many industries see Latinx people as essential, but aren't paying them, aren't giving them the benefits to be able to take care of themselves. And I think that's why right now we're seeing a big crisis in Siler City of many people who are really afraid of going to work, but don't have an option of not going to work because they are afraid that they will lose their jobs if they don't go to work. This is obviously a very personal issue for me because I have family in Siler City, and I grew up in Siler City, and I know a lot of people there. Speaking about these issues of like how all of these things intersect of what's happening in this political moment. A few weeks ago, I helped organize a Black Lives Matter protest in Siler City. It was honestly, from what I know of and talking to other organizers, it was the first time that anything like that has ever happened in Siler City. And we had around 200 people show up, which is incredible for a small town. And again, really shows that these issues are very relevant to communities, rural communities, mostly conservative communities, but that are also changing demographically. A lot of the people that were at this rally were brown people, brown young people, a lot of them Latinx young people. And so it's amazing to see that solidarity and understanding amongst especially younger generations that these issues really intersect. I really liked this sign that somebody brought, which was in Spanish. It was "Tu lucha es mi lucha," which in English is "Your fight is my fight." And I think it's really encompassing of what we're living in this moment, that regardless of where we live, but especially in small communities where these issues don't really happen and aren't being talked about, that there is a lot of political consciousness going, and that this is really that moment going back to building that solidarity amongst different communities, and that in this political moment that all of this is possible, because I think all of us want to live in a better future, and that we know that none of us can go back to an era of inequality, of injustice, and that a lot of people are embracing that right now. And I just quickly want to mention that the organizers that came together to organize this was mostly Black women, and a few of us who were supporting them who weren't Black. And it was just like an incredible scene of solidarity, and understanding that this is a very key moment for all of us to come together and fight together.
Emilio, always a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Emilio Vicente is the Advocacy and Communications Director for Familia, Trans Queer Liberation Movement. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org.